Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. Today, my guest is John Rowley. John is one of the hosts of the Behind the Barrel podcast, which highlights the path that's taken by veterans to find success after their service. So welcome to the show, John. Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself and your military background?
Hey, thanks for having me on the show. I'm the host of Beyond the Barrel podcast. So I've got a little bit of an interesting military background. I joined in 2009. I had a one-year-old and a pregnant wife. 2009, everything came crashing down economically, and I found myself looking for a job. So one of my buddies, I was talking about joining the National Guard just because I had a big bonus or whatever. And he's like, man, there's no way you could ever join the military. You don't have the discipline for that. I was like, excuse the fuck out of me. And I actually enlisted to be EOD. Had no idea what I was getting myself into. Didn't realize it was one of the most difficult jobs in the military as far as academics. And I got there and I thrived. I did really, really well. And got to the end of training. So I was almost 2 years deep into training. I had 3 weeks left. I had orders to go to Fort Carson, Colorado, and begin my career as a bomb disposal technician. And I found out that my wife had been cheating on me. And the same day, I was having a big test. Well, something happened with the test, and it was something that wasn't that big of a deal. I could have fought it, and I lost my cool with the instructor. He failed me on purpose, but I could have challenged that and won because I had a good reason. It was true. But when I found out that he failed me on purpose, he's like, prove it. I just smacked the shit out of him.
Oh, God. Ow.
Well, luckily, I didn't get kicked out of the military. Got reclassed, went to Fort Sam Houston, be a combat medic. Got to my unit, and I was never a stellar soldier. I was never a great runner. I'm a big guy. I was always good at humping. I was good at my job, but as far as speed, wasn't the greatest soldier as far as basically PT. That was the only thing that ever held me back. Went to Afghanistan. It was a pretty kinetic tour. Went to the Kunar River Providence in Afghanistan. Our XO got the Medal of Honor while we were there. He grabbed a hold of a guy, ran him out of a suicide vest, ran him out of the platoon. Guy detonated at his feet, and then a second suicide vest blew up in the back of the platoon. And I mean, it was just a bad day.
Wow.
Kind of hurt my shoulder on the way out of Afghanistan. Tore my labrum. Had to have a couple surgeries and ended up getting med boarded. I don't know how deep you want me to go into my actual military career.
Yeah, I mean, as deep as you want to go. I mean, this is all good stuff. You said it was your XO who got the Medal of Honor. Was that right? Yeah. And what was his name?
Captain Flood. Okay. Goberg, I don't know how to say it.
Okay.
Well, actually, he was lieutenant at the time, Lieutenant Flood.
Okay. No, that's an amazing story to, be part of that. You know, it's not every day that, Medal of Honors are handed out to soldiers in combat or anything. So it's pretty interesting to hear about that and how that all took place. So, I mean, obviously a very unfortunate circumstance that took place, but that's part of war. War is a whole series of unfortunate circumstances that come together, the fact that we're even there, but then to be a part of something that was as courageous as what took place there is even more interesting. So pretty cool, part of that story anyway. So
same base as Dakota Meyer.
Oh, really?
Bob Joyce and RC East got into firefights the same valley that he got his Medal of Honor.
Wow. Yeah. So that was a pretty Kinetic area, I would imagine, you know.
Guys from my, I'm pretty sure it's the guys from my base ended up, I mean, different time, but was the ones that went and rescued Marcus Luttrell.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Cornwall River, and then it forks off into the, no, I'm sorry, not the Cornwall. You've got the Kunar River, forks off into the Pesh River, forks off into the Cornwall River. And the Lone Survivor guys, Marcus Luttrell and his team, they started off in the Cornwall and funneled down through the Pesh and into the Kunar. So that
Right.
whole operation where they were, I mean, that was just, it was a hotbed for terrorists. That's where we were. Wasn't so crazy when I was there in 2012, but I mean, we were in contact almost every day.
Right. So let's switch gears a little bit here, and talk a little bit about your transition. You know, one of the things that I like to talk about on this podcast, because it's a podcast geared towards, you know, helping out veterans and talking about the you know, the struggles that they deal with. And one of the things that people do deal with a lot is the transition out of the military. You know, it's not always an easy thing. It's you're dealing with you know, the loss of a sense of purpose, loss of identity, as, you know, a soldier, or you know, trying to find a job and relating with civilians, and a whole series of other things that people are dealing with. So what was your like life what was your life like, excuse me, after the military? Was it smooth transition, rocky transition? How did that go for you?
Hit in the face with a bat.
Right.
So I got medically discharged, and I ended up going to work for my dad. Love my dad to death, but me and him are both very, very much alpha males. And it's like putting two bulls in a china shop. So I was running his or I was part of his marketing team. He does digital marketing, direct response in the fitness. And I was spearheading the launch of a supplement company. I handled everything from, well, I handled everything from after the initial formulation of the products. I handled everything getting it out to market, and I had no idea what I was doing. And in the process of all of that, him and my mom were going through a rough area where they were going through a nasty divorce. And so it turned into a big, me and him butting heads. It culminated in him coming to the office and me not tolerating his shit that day. And I grabbed a hold of I had a 7-foot L-shaped desk, and I turned that shit over. I mean, it was big. I turned it over. I had people running out of the office. There was a couple of us, and everybody knew me. I mean, I was relatively calm for the most part. Well, I say I was relatively calm. So 2 weekends ago, we were whitewater rafting in the mountains of North Carolina with some buddies and my brother. One of them knew me. He met me during this whole transition period. Right when I came back from Afghanistan, he met me when I went to Florida, a mastermind. I was just getting into the industry, and I didn't know it then, but I had really bad social anxiety. I had aggression. I was just always amped up. And this weekend, he's like, dude, he's like, it's amazing how much you've changed. And I was like, what are you talking about, man? He's like, well, he's like, when I met you in Florida, he's like, at Miami, he's like, we were driving down the road, and you're just like, people are like looking around. He's like, your head was on a swivel. You're like just waiting for somebody to pounce so you can thrash them. And I'm like, I don't remember it like that at all. But my brother's like, dude, you were a So I mean, it's hard to realize when you're in the middle of it, right? What I tell people when I talk to them about transition, you kind of realizing the problems that they're having in their life is you got like if there's always seems to be chaos in your life, right? You gotta take a step back and look at it from that 30,000-foot elevated view, because it's true, you can't see the forest for the trees. You know, you're sitting there in the middle of it. No matter where you look, you can't find a direction. But if you could change your perspective and take a step back, everything becomes clear. You can see the rivers, you can see the valleys, you can see the roadways, you can see where you need to go. And it's a lot easier said than done. I mean, just as much with your own life as it is in a forest mountaineering situation. It's not easy to get to 30,000 feet. You gotta do it. You gotta get see which way you gotta go.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. You know, taking it from that 30,000 foot view, looking down at you know, all the pieces of your life, you know, your family life, your spouse, your kids, your other relatives, your neighbors, your friends, your job, taking a look at all of that, taking stock of all of that and seeing how you're interacting with these people and trying to understand how they all play together. You know, if you're coming home from work and pissed off, well, that's probably going to lead to a not so great relationship at home with your spouse or your kids and other friends and things like that. So it's really important to look at it from that 30,000 foot view, like you said. So I like how you phrase that.
And when I was going through all of this, yeah, I was amped up, but I mentioned earlier that I had found out that my wife was cheating on me at the time, but we had tried to work it out because I knew that if I got a divorce when I was in the military, I would never see my kids. 100% of my money was going to go to her, and I was just going to be getting bent over and rammed from the back with a ball bat. So we tried to make it work, but I mean, it lasted 6 months after I got out, maybe. Mm-hmm. But I got to the point where this whole thing was going on, and I was driving my Harley, riding my motorcycle was the only piece that I had. The loud exhaust kind of muffled out my internal screams, and the wind just, you know, seemed to, it was just very freeing for me. It was very cathartic. And I was riding my motorcycle one day, and I was on a back road. I lived kind of in the country, not really in the country, but I was on a back country road, and a tractor trailer was coming toward me. And I had that split second, do I pull a Jax Teller? I don't know if you got any Sons of Anarchy fans, but he went full on spread eagle into the front of an oncoming tractor trailer on his Harley, just leaned back. And I had that thought. I was like, you know, shit would just, I wouldn't have to deal with this stuff anymore. And I was like, it was a split second thought. And I pulled my motorcycle over. I had a little heart-to-heart with myself, a little come-to-Jesus meeting. And I went and got help. I went to the VA, drove up there, talked to them. I mean, really, just was, they didn't do anything for me, per se. That was my turning point. That was me admitting that I had a problem that I needed to change. So going forward, I changed everything. I got a divorce. I changed my relationship with my kids. I quit working for my dad so eloquently by throwing a table. I decided to use my GI Bill, go back to school. I changed everything. I cut people out of my life. I cut everybody out of my life. I changed everything that I could. I wasn't drinking at the time, at least not that I remember. I might have been. I wasn't drinking heavily. I wasn't abusing it. Because that was one thing that I decided when I came back from Afghanistan. I saw a lot of my buddies ruining their lives via alcohol, trying to deal with the demons. So they were getting DUIs, they were ruining their military careers, and I for a long time I just decided I wasn't going to drink until I was able to and not use it.
Well, and that's good, because I think a lot of people don't have that that introspection and being able to understand themselves that they are going to abuse it and they're going to, you know, go too far with it. And, I think I'm speaking for a lot of people here where I say, I'm glad you made the decision to pull over, instead of, you know, going head on into the tractor trailer. I think, you know, pulling over, having that little heart to heart moment with yourself is, a good thing that you did. Obviously, we don't want to add to that 22 a day number statistic. And, especially for your family, you know, your parents, your kids, and they don't want you to do stuff like that either, you know? And so, it's great that you had that turning point. So you said that the VA didn't really help much. What was it that they were able to do, or was it just something that you needed to go someplace and just vent and get stuff off your chest? What was that like?
Just that, it was really just that making the decision. You know, it's like you're driving down the road and you realize you're going the wrong way, you got to make a U-turn. It doesn't matter where you make the U-turn, as long as you make the U-turn. And you going and getting help from the VA, I mean, it was, I don't know, 7 o'clock on like a Saturday. I mean, it's not like they got mental health providers just sitting there chilling. They might, but I mean, I was just like, hey, we got a problem. And they tell me who to follow up with. They're like, "Are you good?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm good." After I sat there for a little while, talking to people, whatever. It's just more able to go in there and decompress and just be like, okay. It was just that culmination of, there's a problem. Like let's get it fixed. Like there's no reason to keep prolonging this, right? Like, and I'm still not really, like, I'm a proponent of therapy and mental health and everything. However, for me, I never really got much out of therapy because I'm one of those people. It's like, okay, you learn this in a book, but and you do have coping mechanisms. They got things that they can do to help. But for me, what always helped with me was just being able to unload with somebody who's been there, done that, and talk through it.
So, right.
Your management, I've done anger management. I've done group counseling. I've done private counseling. I've done marriage counseling. I've done individual counseling. I've done it all, and I actually get the most out of first probably when I met my wife. Second is my podcast, because I'm able to do exactly what you're doing. I'm able to talk to people and talk about their story and figure out what they did to change their life and to achieve their definition of success. Whether that be with their family, whether that be educationally, through starting a business. A lot of guys that we talk to are business owners. But we want to highlight that we highlight that path. So being able to talk to these guys on a regular basis for me helps. And just kind of distancing myself from that, right? Like, it's like, think of it this way. Like, you're at a bonfire and you got a piece of it on fire. You pull it away from the fire and it'll still burn a little bit, cause of the heat. The farther you're able to get it away from that fire, it's going to go out and it's going to be less easy to reignite that flame. That's kind of how it is with me, right? Like, so I stay away from the drama. I spend time with my family when I can. I work a lot. I don't sit still very well. When I was going through all of this, I was trying to figure out how not to. So I'll get back to my story a little bit, and it'll all play in together. So as I was going through this, and I decided to get my divorce, I got hammered. I didn't have a job. I had no money. I went from zero debt other than my house and my car to $85,000 in credit card debt. Just credit card debt.
Then I had, oh, wow.
I had her lawyer, all of that on top of that in 1 year. Because I was paying almost $3,000 a month in child support and alimony. I got a funny story. So I was trying to get out of the alimony. The alimony was the lion's share of what I was paying to my ex-wife. So I hired a private investigator through my attorney. And I'm like, listen, I don't really want to do this. It seems like a lot of money for nothing, yada, yada. And she's like, he's the best. He's the best. Let's do it. I was like, okay. So I give her $1,000 to get this guy started. A couple days later, I get a phone call. I was like, yo, what's up? She's like, we got him. I was like, okay, what do we got? She's like, somebody picked up your kids from your house and drove them to Raleigh. The PI followed them and sat on the house for a long time. I'm like, was driving a white Ford? She's like, yeah. I'm like, that's my fucking car. Followed 30 miles and sat on my house for hours. When I gave them my car, I gave them a picture of my car. I gave them my license plate. I gave them everything. I even gave them our schedule of when I was going to be getting the kids. And it didn't get relayed to this private eye. So I spent $1,000 that I did not have to follow myself to my house.
That's amazing. I mean, in a terrible way, yeah.
It wasn't funny then. So I've gone through all of this. I've got all this debt and everything. And during this whole thing, I'm a mess. I meet my wife, my current wife now. I was not looking for a relationship. I'm like, I'm never getting married again. It's going to be amazing if I get through this without putting a body in the ground, honestly. So I meet her, and we're hanging out. We're kind of... He's like, there's nothing long lasting with him. He's a crazy conservative. I'm like, this bitch is crazy liberal. But she's fun to hang out with. It's fine. So through that of me being crazy me, her being crazy her, we met in the middle. And I'm a little bit more open to certain things now. She's a little bit more open to certain things now. And it works really, really well. Like, she's my, I mean, without her, I'd have been, I probably wouldn't have washed up in the creek somewhere.
It's like a yin and yang kind of thing, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm tall, she's short, I'm big, she's small. I'm Irish, she's Italian. She'd kill the shit out of me in a heartbeat if she needed to, but she's the sweetest thing. We're going through all of this, and I decided to go back to school. So I was going back to get my engineering degree. My sister and my now wife talked me into going back to school. Both of them went through school, and in my household growing up, school was never a priority. My mom tried. My dad tried to say that it was, but he always had like a stigma about school. So because he was in college and got into a car accident, he was going to be in the 1980 Olympics for track. And then drove into a tree the day before he went by to school and ended his track career, almost ended his life.
Oh, wow.
School was always like a thorn in his side. So, and he's a serial entrepreneur anyway. So to me, I was like, I don't need school. I'm just going to go work for myself. Until I realized that getting a job without checking some of those boxes is freaking hard. So I decided, I was like, all right, let's do this. Let's go back to school. Let's utilize it. And honestly, the reason I did it was because they were going to pay me and I was broke. Honestly. So I went and I got my degree. I was working at a bar at night, a shitty bar making dog shit money. But I was getting phone numbers all the time because I'm charismatic. At the time, I was in really good shape. My wife hates it. She's like, you were getting... Like, there was a joke that I would get more phone numbers than the girls at the bar. I was in good shape at the time, but I'm a little chubby now. That's cool. I got comfortable. But I was making no money. And at one point, somebody came in and they're like, hey, Doc, let me just hit your Harley. I had a beautiful 2008 Harley bagger with hand-laid gold leaf into the pane. It was beautiful. And somebody didn't see it and backed into it and sent it over a curb and totaled it. Luckily, they fled the scene. But the insurance money that came with it, there's a jewelry store right out front. So they got the tag number. I got paid out more than I bought for the bike, but half of me was like, go get a bike. And the other half of me is like, bitch, you got no money. Like, do something with the money. So I took half of the money and I put it toward paying back child support so I didn't go to jail. It's funny. It was right when I was going to go to jail. The judge was like, listen, you got to pay this money or you're going to go to jail. And I'm like, throw me in jail. I'm not paying her regardless. You know, I was being stupid at the time. But I took the other half of the money and bought a pickup truck. It was a 97 Ford F-350 diesel with 350,000 miles and, you know, big jacked up. But I was like, it's going to be a construction truck. I got a construction background. The only thing I left for my marriage was with the clothes on my back, my motorcycle and my tools. So I was like, I'm going to do what I can. I bought the truck and I told myself, I was like, I will work at this bar and grow my business until it's more profitable for me to go to work. Day one with my truck, I put an ad out on, what was the app? Nextdoor. They're like, oh, I need somebody to move a bed to the dump. And I'm like, oh, that's right by my house. I'll do it for $40. And I was like, that's 20 minutes worth of work. I did $40. I went back to the bar and I quit. I was off and running. I mean, I did first, like, 6 months, I did six figures. I went from hauling a bed to... Now, the six figures gross. It wasn't net. That was, I was making enough to not get arrested for child support and alimony, and I was able to start paying off my debt. But I started growing this company while going to school. And my goal was always to go to work for somebody else, something with benefits, something to where it was stable and... I can learn from somebody because it's there's something to say about going out there and blazing your own trail, but there's also something about learning from somebody who's done it.
Right.
I was like, when I was doing my company, I was bidding on jobs by going, they're like, hey, can you do this? And I'm like, yeah, sure. How to change out a shower pan on YouTube. And I was figuring it out how to charge and I was Googling everything and I was taking on jobs that I had zero
experience or skills.
Yeah, I can't, like, I've always been really good at building. I've always been doing it with my hands, but I was doing things that I hadn't done before. Now, I did it. I mean, you would never know that. I mean, I went from moving a bed to 6 months later, I was doing $40,000 bathroom remodels that were 8 feet by 8 feet.
Oh, wow.
Putting a tile that was $70 a square foot, high-end plumbing, like I've got a very keen eye. So I was doing very high-end renovations, which then helped catapult me into the job that I'm doing now. Now I do commercial. I'm a commercial general contractor. I build commercial buildings. I do everything from small, really fast-paced fit-ups because I'm really good at the stress. I don't like it, but I've become my company's go-to guy for these really fast. There's no way we're going to do this job and make money. So they give it to me and then I handle it. Or jobs that it's like, okay, the owner's going to be a pain in the ass because I go in there and I kill it. So I was lucky enough to be able to identify what I wanted to do, and then I went out and found out the path to do it, which actually brings me to a really good point. The VA did a really, really good job with this. So I used my VA benefits and I did what's called vocational rehab. I'm sure you're familiar with it. I was just rated a certain level. I was able to use my the voc rehab, and to qualify for that, I had to go and take personality tests, and I had to interview people in the space, and I had to look for jobs. And all of this is super important because it ensures that you can get a job later on in the career path that you want, in the location that you want. Because, and this is what I tell my kids, I got a 14-year-old that's talking about looking at colleges and stuff, and I'm telling her the same thing. If you don't research all this ahead of time, all your stuff doesn't align, it doesn't help. Because if you want to be a veteran, if you want to be a large, large animal veterinarian, so like cows and horses and shit like that, but you want to live in Chicago, that doesn't work.
It doesn't work, no.
If you want to be an aerospace engineer and live in Nebraska, it doesn't work. So you got to figure out what you want to do with your life. You got to figure out the boxes that need to be checked. You need to figure out where you want to go, and then figure out how it's going to all work together. And that's what I did. Luckily, I'm in construction, so I can go anywhere I want. But I'm in a really, really hot area, and it's I get job offers almost every day for making way more than I make now. But when I graduated school, and I was like, I finally have time to sit back and relax because I've been doing school and working and building a company and raising my kids and doing all of this. Then I found myself bored. And I was like, what do I do now?
Right. Yeah.
Let's fucking give back. So we started a podcast.
Yeah. And I wanted to get to that too. I wanted to get to your podcast because I know the mission of your podcast is very similar to the mission of this podcast, which ultimately is helping out veterans. Right. So where did that idea come from? Like, you know, I know obviously you're saying that you're sitting around, you felt like you're kind of bored, let's give back. But, you know, was there a discussion that took place? I know you have a co-host on the show. What was that all about?
So I actually met my co-host in college. He's still in school. He's getting his electrical engineering degree. He's a couple semesters away from graduating. I was able to land pretty high paying job in the field that I was at based off my experience in construction, experience of the military, and my associate's degree, where I decided I was going to leave it at that. I was like, I'm 33, 34 years old at this point. I'm extremely employable right now. I don't want to prolong it. So I decided to stop at an associate's degree. But we met in school. We were in calculus one. We had gone through almost the entire year. And I was talking to the teacher after class. I'm a talkative person. I'm very, very conversational with people. So I sat in the front of class so I could ask questions and I can talk shit back and forth to the instructor. And he sat in the very back of the class like a normal, you know, broken combat veteran. He was in the Navy. He was with SEAL Team. He wasn't a SEAL, but he was the comms guy for SEAL Team 810. And he did a stint with DevGru. So he was special operations his entire career. And it was right after Halloween, and he comes up after I'm talking to the teacher. He's like, "Where's that douchebag walking around Riverwood wearing your camis and an aid bag? You know this." And it's down downhill from there. We started hanging out. God, like less than a year later, he was one of my groomsmen at my wedding. Like it was just fast friends. And we were talking, and I was like, dude, we should, because I had this marketing background, and I was getting kind of, I don't want to say bored, but I was looking for something more. And I was like, let's do a book. And which was a stupid idea because I'm pretty dyslexic, so I hate reading and I hate writing. I hate it. Now I do all the writing for our podcast. I do all the show notes and I do all the creatives and I do all that crap. But I hate it because it takes me a long time. Even just finding the hook for a title. Like last night I was trying to think and I'm just like, it took me an hour to find the hook. And I'm like, okay, we're good. Let's go ahead and do this. But we're like, we're gonna do a book, and we started. And it was going to be a lack of a better phrase, anti-porn book.
Okay.
Passion for it. Me personally, I didn't give a shit. You want to watch porn, whatever. I don't give a shit. But he had a passion for it. I was like, oh, we could do it. You write the book and I'll help with the marketing. And we'll get it out there. Well, that never happened. We didn't want it enough. And then we were talking about other things. I was like, okay, well, we both have a passion for veterans. We can do a veteran success book. And we started talking about that, and the premise for it was we were going to interview a bunch of veterans and then figure out what they did to find success, and we were going to write a book on it. Well, if we were going to interview all these veterans that were found extreme success through crazy adversity, why not record it so we can have it for later? And I'm like, what? If we're going to record it, turn this shit into a podcast.
Yeah, makes sense.
So this is how ignorant I was with the podcast. We're like, okay, we're starting a podcast. I'm sitting here, I'm brainstorming. I'm like, Beyond the Barrel. And I look it up and I'm like, there's already a Beyond the Barrel taken for it's like a wine tasting place, real small. I accidentally tagged it once and they're like, oh, fuck it. They started following me. But we start going through this and we're like, Beyond the Barrel is a great name. We're not going to, because it's like life beyond the barrel, right? And we can take a different angles, you know, for later on. So we start this Beyond the Barrel journey, and I start reaching out to people. I didn't know anything about the technology. I didn't know how we're going to record. I didn't have microphones yet. I didn't have a website. I didn't know anything. I was completely clueless. And I start reaching out to people that I had zero business reaching out to. Guys like Vincent Rocco Vargas. And I'm like, hey, we're starting a podcast, yada, yada, yada. Love you, have you on the show. Call me here, email me here, whatever, or message me back on Instagram. 10 minutes later, I get a phone call. I'm like, I don't know, Utah, I don't know who this guy is. I sent it a voicemail. He's like, hey, Doc, it's Rocco. Give me a call back. We'll talk. And I was just like, no. There's no way the same dude. Call him back. And we talked for like 25 minutes, 30 minutes. Cool, really cool dude. Had him on the show a couple months ago. And it was off and running. Like, our first guest was John Burke. Like, what the fuck was he doing talking to us? Like, these dudes that had all these crazy followings and crazy stories. And, you know, so that was it. We were up and running. We figured it out. I went through a couple co-hosts in the beginning because my co-host Kyle was going through shit. So he just finished his divorce, and he went MIA with me for a little while when we were supposed to be starting. So I brought in my other buddy, Chris, who was another Navy vet, and he had a podcast at the time that he was leaving. So he had experience, so he helped me get everything going. And then apparently I was too demanding. I don't know. I can't do this anymore, man. You're too stressful. I'm like, why am I stressful? Because I want stuff done on a timely fashion? Come on, man. Come on. You know better than that. Let's do it. Let's make
right.
This. Oh, yeah, he left.
Well, I had a similar story with my podcast. I mean, I never had a co-host on the show, but getting started, I've been doing this for about 2 years now. And when I first started, I knew I wanted to do a podcast because I thought it was a great way to reach a wide audience, you know, people that I would never be able to reach in other parts of the country, even other parts of the world. I would never be able to reach them just by, you know, putting out, little stories here and there on a, you know, whatever, on a blog or whatever. Podcast just seems to have like much bigger reach, and the audio medium just seems to be something that's taken off anyway. So I was like, I'm gonna do a podcast. And then I was like, I don't know how to do a podcast. I've never done this before. I don't have a microphone. I didn't have any, like, I had no clue how to edit the audio, or no clue. All this stuff was brand new to me. And the first few episodes I recorded by myself, And other than my wife, I don't think anyone knew about him, which is like talking about marketing. That's a terrible way to market a podcast, you know. But, you know, I do want to go back to something that you mentioned earlier and, you know, talk about how, you know, podcasting sort of acted as like a form of therapy for you, you know, almost in a way where you get to talk to other people and, you know, just that camaraderie or, you know, that the conversations that you get to have just really, you know, for me anyways, it actually helps to be able to listen to, you know, people's stories and hear where they came from and what they were going through. And then, you know, be like, oh, wow, that, you know, that's kind of a good idea. Like maybe I should do that, you know, cause it seemed like it worked for that person. Maybe it'll work for me. And, you know, honestly, that's kind of my hope for this podcast is that, you know, people will hear different stories, different perspectives, and then hopefully be able to apply some of these things to their own lives, you know.
And realize that life's not that bad. I mean, even when it's bad because you're in the middle of it, you know?
Right.
I thought my life was hard. And then I was talking to other people. One of my first guests, my buddy, Matt, he wasn't my buddy at the time. I had just met him. Now he's a buddy of mine. He was sitting in his bedroom and he put a gun to his head and he pulled the trigger and it went off and it burned his forehead.
Oh, jeez.
Or he would never do it again. And then you got dudes like Dakota Meyer, man. He was, you know, Medal of Honor recipient. I was listening to a podcast with him and Jocko, and it was honestly ear-jerking because he fought in the same places as me. You know, I've been to the same places as him. I lived in the same buildings as he lived in. And he came back, and he was being given this the highest award that you can get as a soldier or a Marine. And he went to his buddy's garage. He parked his car in his auto body garage. And he pulled his Glock out of the glove compartment. He put it in his mouth and he pulled the trigger. And somebody, he doesn't know who, unloaded it. And he always kept it loaded. So somebody went in there and purposely unloaded it. And at that point he said, never again. And everybody that I've talked to that has made that step and tried to kill themselves, every single one of them said never again.
Right. And I've even heard of stories where there are people who survived, you know, similar to what you were just talking about, but they survived in a suicide attempt, like jumping off a bridge or a cliff or something like that. And on the way down, they were like regretting it. And they were just, why did I do this? This was a bad decision. And then, you know, fortunately they survived, but you know, that's not the case for everybody. And so, like, I think it is important for people to understand it is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And, you know, it really needs to be, you know, addressed a little bit better than it's being right now, I think, you know, so.
I don't want to say it's not being addressed right. So I've got a little bit of a different outlook than a lot of people, right? First off, I want to say that suicide is, like you said, it's a permanent solution to a temporary problem. But it doesn't take that pain away. All it does is disperse it and amplify it to your family and friends. That's it. But I also, I don't think that we're doing a bad job as a society with better mental health. I really don't. I think there's programs out there. I think that there, the VA in a lot of areas has the capability to take care of you. I think we've got a problem with realizing that we have a problem before it's too late. And abusing alcohol and drugs, because I've got so many friends. I lost more friends to suicide than I have to combat. And we were in.
Right.
Yeah. So the fact that more people come home and kill themselves, I got a dude that was in my unit, man. Came back, a couple combat tours. He was in the Cornwall. You know, where he was, I think he was on Restrepo. But after he got out of the military, he decided to end his life. And then a year later, on his anniversary, his twin brother killed himself. Both of them injured. And it's like those parents just lost two of their twin sons. And I got twin girls on the way. My wife's pregnant as shit right now with two girls. And losing one to suicide, like losing kids is hard. It's something that people should never have to do. Losing family members, and they're both fathers. losing somebody is difficult, but realizing that they did it on purpose is a different level, man. And there's ways around it. First off, you got to realize you got to take responsibility for it. Don't just fucking ignore it. Yeah, there's a problem. It's like your car's ticking. You're just gonna ignore it? You need to check the oil. You're gonna bring it in, see if they can do something. Eventually, it's gonna throw a rock. The same thing with your mental health. You gotta maintain it, and find different ways. Some people do really well with therapy. Some people do really good trying psychedelics. That sounds like a cool experience. I've personally never done it, but I know a lot of people that have had really good response with the psychedelic therapy. Talking about it though, there's so many ways that you can avoid making that. But people just, they ignore it. And that's the problem, is that they're not taking it seriously. They're ignoring it, and they're hoping that it goes away, and they're hoping that they can numb it with external stuff, right? And it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. And when you ignore it and you just kind of hope it goes away, it never does. You know, it tends to get worse. And, you know, just like anything, like you were saying, like with a car or something like that, but even with your own physical health, you know, if your knee is shot and you're trying to, you know, keep using it as you were, as if you were, you know, 15, 18 years old or whatever, it's not going to work. You know, it's only going to continue to get worse, and it's going to deteriorate, and it's going to make it impossible for you to continue going, to continue walking or running or carrying heavy things. You know, you're just not going to be able to do those types of things. So you have to go get it checked out, you know, and your mental health is very similar.
The problem is if you ignore it, this is the motherfucker of it, right? You ignore it and you hide from it, and when it comes back when you're already low. It comes back when you're alone. It comes back at night whenever. It doesn't come back when you're out there having fun with your friends. It comes back when you have the ability to do something about it.
Right. It does. And even if you are out with your friends, or you're out doing something and something's, you know, coming up and it's creeping up and it's starting to bring you down, people tend to isolate themselves and withdraw from the situations, so that they end up in those situations like you were just describing. And, you know, that's not a good place to be in either. You know, you don't want to be alone in those situations. So, go ahead.
Struggle with that because I'm an extrovert, so I like stuff. I like getting out there and doing things. When I had that thought cross my mind, I was just so tired of it. I was just, and there was nothing that couldn't be changed. It was all stuff that could be changed, and I changed it. And now I'm happy today. Don't think about that kind of stuff anymore. I'm honestly a completely different person.
Well, and that's, I think, an important point too, is that it was a choice that you made to make this change and not just continue going down the same path and letting just life just happen to you. You made a choice. You actively chose to, you know, go back to school and make changes in your life. And without that, if you don't change anything, you can't really expect anything to just change for you. You have to be the driving force behind that.
Yeah, and more than anything else, I like to tell people that you can't change directions if you're not moving.
Right.
If you're just sitting there stagnant and you're not doing anything, nothing's going to change. But if you're actively trying to figure out what's going to help you, what's going to fix you, it's a lot easier to change directions. And this goes for your mental health. This goes for your career. It goes for education. It goes for your family. It's a lot easier to steer when you're moving. Like, think of it like a car, right? You got an old car without power steering, and you're trying to make a U-turn. That bitch isn't moving if you're not moving.
Right.
Wheel. I mean, these young kids listen, they probably don't know what the hell we're talking about. But you're sitting here cranking on the wheel and it's not moving. But as soon as you start moving a little bit, it gets a whole lot easier.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And yeah, you're right. Kids these days have no clue what you're talking about, but that's okay. I know what you're talking about. And I've been there. I've driven those kind of cars. So, you know, it's true. I mean, you know, anything in life, if you're not moving, there's no way you're going to be able to get the momentum to change directions. You really do need that movement. And a lot of times looking in on yourself and kicking your own ass and saying, I need to get up and make this change, you know, whether it's changing your job, changing, going back to school, you know, if you're in a bad relationship, getting out of that relationship, you know, fixing relationships, if you can, you know, all of that stuff is a choice that you have to make, and you have to do something to get those things done. So
something to say about momentum, right? Like think, look at any sports team, right? You take a sports team and they're doing bad. They're just game after game. They lose a game and they lose that mental energy. And as soon as they get a win, then they're more likely to come back and win again. And once they get a couple wins under the streak, they're unstoppable because they've got that momentum. Same thing with your life. You start getting little wins. I know everybody's probably heard it, but who was it? The Admiral that talks about the little victories, getting up and making your bed.
Right.
And that's a little victory. You're starting your day off with a victory. So those little victories, and I tell my kids this all the time. My daughter was asking me the other day. She was like, Dad, what's self-love? And I was like, well, that's a fucking random question. But we get to talking about it, and she's taking notes and everything because she's trying to figure out her life. She keeps trying to talk to boys, and I keep hitting her across the head with a bat, and I'm just like, nah, I'm not having that shit. Keep going for that. So trying to get her to be, you know, trying to get her to be that, you know, young, strong, independent woman, don't need no man. So we're harping on that. It's like, you got to love yourself before you can love somebody else. And she was asking, she's like, well, how do you love yourself? And I'm like, you've got to put yourself first. You've got to do things for you. You've got to know who you are. Because if you get into a relationship, and it's just as much as when you're an adult, you get into a relationship and you're not good by yourself, at that point, you're bound to them. And I've seen this time and time again. They're not with each other because they love each other. And this is actually something that really stuck with me when I met my wife. I met my buddy Chris, and we met with my buddy Chris, and we were talking. I was struggling financially. My wife's a rock star. She's in pharmaceutical manufacturing. She's smart as shit. She went to a private university, paid for it out of her own pocket, then went and got her MBA, actually recently, just graduated. But she's a rock star at work, very, very successful, and she was dating me, who was a mentally unstable lunatic. And I was coming out of a relationship where, you know, we were stuck together. I didn't want to lose my kids. She didn't want to lose the paycheck. And that's how it was. And then we get together with my friend Chris, and he texts me a day later. He's like, don't fuck this up. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, you've got something rare because Carly loves you. She's with you because she wants to be. She's not with you because she needs to be. She doesn't need you for shit except for reaching something off the top shelf because she's 5'1". And I laugh and I tell her about it, and she's like, I don't need you for that. She's like, I got a ladder. but there's something to say about being in a relationship. You want to be with somebody, not because you need to be with somebody. And it's the same thing growing up. Like, I'm raising my kids to be like that. I want them to be independent. I want them to enjoy their life alone. I don't want to say alone. Enjoy their life before tying themselves down. Because I had kids young. I had, you know, I was... My ex-wife was 18, you know, still in high school. She was graduating, so she had the baby, had my daughter right after she graduated. I just graduated. So, you know, we were the young, stupid people that, I don't want to say ruined our lives, but it didn't ruin our life, but it very much challenged our lives. So everything that we had to do was harder because of the decisions that we made when we were younger.
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, all the decisions that you make, I mean, you're basically the sum of the decisions you've made in your life. Like it all adds up over time, and good decisions, bad decisions, they're all going to, you know, pile up and create the type of person that you're going to be. And if you don't like where you're at, I think it's really just a matter of making better decisions and changing who you are. Right.
I also looked at my, checked out my podcast today, because the podcast that went live today is Choices Define Your Future, Not Your Past.
You know what? That's complete coincidence, because I did not listen to that episode yet, but I will check that one out. So, anyways, speaking of your podcast, where can people go to find more about your podcast and subscribe and listen to it?
We're on all platforms. You can go to beyondthebarrelpodcast.com. That'll put you to everywhere you need to go. We're on Beyond the Barrel Podcast on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. That's everything. If you want to connect with me personally, I'm a little bit more active on my personal stuff. It's John Doc Rowley, Doc because I was a medic with the infantry. And we actually just started. I just started this new thing. I think it's gonna be funny. I started this new basic white guy persona, where just I'm a self-proclaimed social media influencer, and I'm flamboyant and it's funny and like everybody's like it's hilarious to me because people that know me are like, this is not you. Like, why do you sound like you're this gay man? And the other people are like, right on, brother. This is powerful. I love it. Just like, this is fantastic because they don't realize that this is completely parody.
That's funny. Well, it's good to have fun with that kind of stuff, right? You know?
But yeah, man, I appreciate you having me on the show. I had a great time.
I had a blast too. I think this was a great episode. I liked the content, the information that you shared and everything. I think it was really good message and really powerful. So thank you for sharing it. Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.